Council, if I could reserve 3 minutes again.
You're back.
Yeah. May it please the court again. Kevin March on behalf of Richard Hatfield. So we're asking the court to reverse the commitment order in this case because Mr. Hatfield's commitment to the SEC provides no realistic opportunity for him to improve his current state of acute psychosis. The purpose of the SEC scheme is to commit people for sex offender treatment. It visualizes long-term treatment that provides an opportunity for improvement, and that is not afforded in this case, as the state's own experts conceded at trial.
Is that an element of what the trier of fact is asked to decide in this case?
Well, no, and the trier of fact is deciding whether commitment criteria are met, and those are whether there's a mental abnormality in this case and whether that mental abnormality predisposes one to commit acts of sexual violence. Now, that's not exactly what the trial court found in this case. The trial court said, well, the person he was when he was evaluated has a mental abnormality, and that mental abnormality would predispose him to acts of sexual violence. However, that mental abnormality is being masked by his current state of psychosis. So really what the trial court found, and this is out of...
You haven't appealed on the basis of the sufficiency of the evidence, have you?
No.
Are you giving us a new argument today?
No. The argument is substantive due process.
Okay,
which
why isn't the remedy for that a habeas corpus proceeding after he's committed, that he's not receiving what he's supposed to receive once he's committed, instead of challenging the order of commitment?
Because the basis of commitment here is infirm. There is no legitimate basis to commit somebody under the SEC when you know full well that they won't be able to participate in treatment there. It is essentially warehousing Mr. Hatfield at the SEC.
So isn't the appropriate remedy following commitment to bring whatever kind of proceeding is required to force the state to do what it's supposed to do once he's committed, rather than deciding whether or not he should be committed?
Our position is that there is no basis to commit him under the Supreme Court's recent case in detention of DW, unless there's actually a connection between the nature of the commitment and its purpose. Here, that connection is not in existence because, as the state's own experts conceded and the trial court found, he's not able to meaningfully participate in treatment at the SEC given his current state of psychosis. Unless and until his current state of psychosis is addressed and he's given an opportunity to ameliorate that condition, he won't be able to participate in the SEC. And under In Re DW, that is just like that. It's warehousing him without any opportunity to improve his current condition, which is acute psychosis and schizoaffective disorder and a dissociative delusional state. He's not able to participate in the treatment at the SEC. There is therefore no basis to commit him there. And I would again direct the court to the Supreme Court's reasoning in DW, as well as the U.S. Supreme Court's Jackson v. Indiana case. Both those cases require a reasonable nexus between the commitment, the purpose of the commitment, and the actual nature of what goes on there. And here we just don't have that connection present. And the state really hasn't responded to the substantive due process claim that we've raised. Instead, the state is trying to liken this case to Ture. And Ture's case involved more what Your Honor's question was going towards, and that was whether the conditions of confinement are relevant to the actual determination of commitment criteria. And they answered no, those aren't relevant. But this is different because the trial court found Mr. Hatfield would meet commitment criteria if his psychosis were resolved, but the fact is his psychosis isn't resolved, and the record shows that the SEC isn't doing anything about that. And And the state is also trying to liken this case to Kansas v. Hendricks. And that case's discussion of treatment and the availability of treatment was based on the Kansas Supreme Court's express acknowledgement that the legislature didn't even believe treatment was possible. So the Supreme Court took that and assumed there was no treatment that existed that could improve Mr. Hendricks' condition and said, you know, that's not constitutionally required. But in our scheme,
the problem here that the wrong vehicle was used to commit your client, that he should have just been under the civil commitment proceedings because he presents a danger to others?
Absolutely, if the state could prove him to be a danger to others, but I don't believe the state's even necessarily has a basis to commit him on that ground either, because again, the mental abnormality, which is what causes dangerousness in our scheme, is not there. It's being masked, according to the trial court's own finding.
Well, under the civil commitment process, if the state were to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that your client presented a danger to others, would substantive due process require anything more?
You mean under just the Involuntary Treatment Act?
Yes.
Well, it would, if they could prove that he had a mental illness and he was dangerous, then that would be sufficient for him to be committed under 70-105.
And he wouldn't be able to defend that proceeding on the basis there's nobody that has a treatment for the condition that makes me dangerous.
Well, no, under Kansas v. Hendricks, I suppose that's correct, but the fact is that, you know, the requirement for treatment to be available that would realistically improve the condition, that's a requirement for both the 70-105 and 70-109
scheme. You're saying the state has no ability to commit people that beyond a reasonable doubt present a danger to others unless they also can treat them?
No, but if we're all to accept if we're all to proceed with the understanding that the purpose is treatment, then they can't just warehouse them without providing any treatment. The question of whether treatment exists comes after they're given a realistic opportunity to improve their condition. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you. May it please the Court, Sarah Sappington, Senior Counsel, Attorney General's Office, representing the State of Washington in this matter. The issue of whether or not the commitment was appropriate given Mr. Hatfield's mental state is simply resolved by Turay and McClatchy and Hendricks, as the State's briefing indicates. First, I think that perhaps Mr. Hatfield and I are looking at an entirely different record. Mr. Hatfield now asserts that the State conceded that it had no treatment for Mr. Hatfield at the Special Commitment Center. This is simply not true. The testimony of Dr. Richards was that he was aware of the treatment modalities that were available at Western State Hospital, that he was not aware of anything at Western State Hospital that would have been superior to the treatment methodologies that were able to be offered at the Special Commitment Center. Mr. Hatfield was under the care of a psychiatrist at the Special Commitment Center. He was being treated with antipsychotic medications. So to say that the SCC was offering him no treatment for his psychotic condition is simply not supported by the record. Also,
what did the Supreme Court say about Turay in the DW opinion?
I cannot answer that question.
Because they didn't mention it?
It's because I don't remember.
Okay.
But I can tell you, I can address Turay, which is directly relevant to this case, and Turay was looking in part at McClatchy, and a critical component of McClatchy is that you cannot assert a claim against the conditions of confinement until you are actually civilly committed. And at the commitment proceeding, you have not yet been civilly committed. And this is an attack on the conditions of confinement because treatment is an element of the conditions of confinement. So, as Judge Leach indicated, once Mr. Hatfield has been committed, as he now has been, and if he then asserts that you are not offering me treatment that gives me a realistic opportunity to improve, he can then bring a proceeding, as did Mr. Turay, and say, not that you must release me, because we know both from the Turay and Campbell, and we know from Sealing, that inadequate conditions of confinement, and that would include inadequate treatment, will not constitute a basis for dismissal, but they will constitute a basis for injunctive relief or damages. So he can then say, you must provide me with the type of treatment that I need. Secondly, the issue that I think that Mr. Hatfield now is really attaching much significance to the court's use of the term masking his psychotic symptoms. If the court looks at the findings of fact and conclusions of law, which begin at Clerk's Papers 154, the court will see that in finding number 12, the court said in finding number 6, he has a pedophilic disorder, which is chronic and lifelong. Number 7, that his primary sexual interest is with male children under the age of 13. Number 10, that his mental abnormality is current, that he has a host of other mental conditions, and that his psychotic symptoms have not eradicated his pedophilic disorder. In that sense, the underlying reality of his mental disorder currently exists and is present in the respondent, although the mental abnormality may be temporarily masked. So to the extent that he is now raising some sort of sufficiency argument, it is not supported by the record. The court found in number 13 that there was no evidence
he's
that...
He's conceded he's not making today, that he's not challenging the sufficiency of the evidence to meet the criteria.
So we have sufficient evidence to meet the criteria that he has a mental abnormality and or personality disorder that makes him likely to reoffend. And we have very clear case law in the form of Turay and in McClatchy and in Young versus Sealing in the U.S. Supreme Court that this is not a challenge that is viable, that his remedy for unconstitutional conditions of confinement must be found elsewhere. So unless that court has further questions or unless the court would like me to specifically address the issue of the guardian ad litem matter or the issue of ineffective assistance of counsel, I will sit down. Thank you.
I believe we're talking at cross purposes here because I'm not challenging the sufficiency or that he meets criteria or that that's even current. The problem is that even so, the trial court didn't determine that the SEC could benefit him in any way. It is warehousing.
What case says that the trial court has to make that finding?
In-ray detention of D.W.
Isn't that a different case? Isn't there an affirmative showing there that there was just warehousing going on?
Yes, in that case, it was...
And the trial court here wasn't asked to make a finding.
It was asked, actually, and it excluded that evidence.
Let me finish my question before you anticipate the question.
Apologize.
To make its decision, the trial court was not asked to make a finding about the availability of treatment. And just because a party asks the court to make a finding that's not necessary to the legal question before it doesn't mean that the trial court, when it says it won't do that, makes an affirmative finding that the treatment's not available.
Well, the trial court did have before it evidence that the treatment was not available.
It may have had that evidence, but it may not have accepted it. I mean, counsel has represented that there was treatment available at SCC.
Well, according to the state's own expert, the state's expert said there's little evidence that he had engaged in any kind of sexual behavior. He was not participating and was unable to participate in the SCC treatment. That's at the RP 285 and 287. The state's expert referred to this as a mask and that he has no volitional capacity. And our legislature, in its statement of intent on 7105 or 7109, indicated that that this is goal-oriented treatment. And so there's no relationship between Mr. Hatfield's commitment to the SEC and what is actually supposed to be provided at the SCC. And so apart from what the trial court considered in terms of evidence, my claim is a substantive due process claim.
What did the Supreme Court in the DW opinion say about Turay?
I don't recall seeing Turay in the DW opinion, but
yeah, I don't either.
I'm mistaken.
So are we to assume that the Supreme Court overruled Turay without mentioning it in the DW opinion?
No.
Is that what you're asking us to do?
I'm not asking you to overrule Turay. That's an evidentiary claim about the relevancy of the conditions of confinement. The argument I'm making is that commitment cannot happen when there's no realistic possibility to improve one's condition. And that was the holding of DW, and I'd ask this court to apply it and reverse. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.